You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, J.D., joined this week by the two Chrises.
Yeah.
Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, welcome, gentlemen.
Wow.
Woohoo! Yes.
How's it going? Sir.
It is Fanboy Versus, the brawl of the year, Avengers versus X-Men. There's some Eye of the Tiger.
Eye of the Tiger, it's the thrill of the fight.
Dig it, JD.
Yes, so we are going to be talking about Avengers versus X-Men, which opened this week in comic book store shelves all around the country and world, for that matter.
It so floors me, though, when you talk about it actually being a fight. And we're going to talk about the issue later, but just like the first page where it shows, like, these are the Avengers up here at the top, and the X-Men down at the bottom.
Know,
and there's like five guys. There's five guys on the Avengers side, and like everybody else is up here.
Oh,
at the
there's
top.
Two guys that are right in the middle.
Yeah, they're right in the middle, but if you look at the cover, you can tell which side they're on if the cover's accurate.
Yeah.
Well, they had the. Well, we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
I'm going to get started in there, but let's leave it.
Yeah. So that's going to be. It's fun. I think it's a good start, but we'll get to that, obviously, later. We're also going to be talking about Justice League International, Action Comics, and Ultimate Spider-Man. So good lineup. I am the odd man out with the non-majorly loved comic. So anyway, because I love JLI.
Well, I'm sure somebody loves JLI.
I do, and I'm sure other people. I'm sure
somebody loves Hitler, but, you know.
It's like, doesn't mean it's good. No, people will buy that, right? How many JLI people do you have for your poll there, sir?
Hey, you know. Six books got canceled, and that wasn't one of them.
Exactly.
So there you go. Yeah, so there's that.
That means something.
That's right. You know?
There are more people that are reading that than reading that war book that everybody said was fantastic.
Right.
Yeah. True.
So there you go. All right, so last week we had no news. This week, some news.
Some news. Whoa. Some weird news.
Yes. So what is it?
Like, the only real news, like comic news, is that DC's going to do a He-Man miniseries.
What?
Hell yes.
That's not an April Fool's thing?
I know.
It's not.
It was like...
a six-issue He-Man and the Masters of the Universe miniseries by James Robinson and Billy Tan.
What is up with that? Oh, my God.
What is going on? What the hell?
It's like I'm in Bizarro World. I'm like...
Well, I mean, so are the characters, because the plot of this thing is that Skeletor has discovered a way to reshape reality, making himself ruler of Castle Grayskull while living the heroes of Eternia as peasants with no memories of their former lives.
Okay.
Oh.
I'm interested in this. Are you not interested in this?
No.
Well, it's not an uninteresting premise. You know,
it's a Masters of the Universe comic coming out.
That's one strike against it.
All right, bad thing one.
DC strike Comics one. Is putting it out.
Strike two.
and the team is not shit. What is up with
James
this?
Robinson? James Cry for Justice Robinson?
Oh, come on. Come on.
We'll cry for justice there.
I like to look back to JSA. Look back to JSA. Okay.
It all depends on what you get right, though. Do you get Cry for Justice or do you get JSA? You know.
Hey, I never finished that mini, so that doesn't count.
Okay. Well, there may have been a reason for that. You know, and that premise, too, it just strikes like, all right, so we have this property, Masters of the Universe. What we're going to do is not do that. We're going to do something that's completely unlike that.
It's so unpopular that all the franchise owners can do with it is sell a couple thousand toys direct to adult fans via their poorly maintained internet store. Let's make a comic of that. I get that, like, the people that are reading, you know, because, you know, young people don't read comics. Young people don't read comics. We know that as a generalization. It's all the 30-somethings, 20, 30-somethings right. that read comics. And that's the only audience He-Man actually has. I'm not knocking it. This is a statement of fact. This is the only audience He-Man has now is its adult fans. Like G.I. Joe. I don't believe G.I. Joe has a child fan base anymore, but it has a big enough adult collector base that it's actually still able to survive in stores. He-Man is physically incapable of surviving in stores, as has been proven now on its adult collector base alone.
They can't even put He-Man toys with DC toys and sell them.
And they can't even, I
would totally buy that Superman if it wasn't partnered with that shit He-Man toy.
To digress for a moment, editorialize for a moment. Like, you get a lot of people who claim that the problem with the He-Man, the 2002 He-Man line, was that it was all Skeletors and He-Man.
That hurt it, though, because they were everywhere.
Yeah, well, it hurt, oh, it hurt it in the
hurt
sense
distribution.
That... Well, the only reason it hurt it was because no children gave anything resembling a fuck.
Yeah.
And so they did not buy Skeletor and He-Man. I mean, if you can't sell the prime two characters out of your children's toy franchise to children, then something is wrong. And
well, how did the Lord of the Rings toys sell? I mean, did they sell?
I don't think they sold either.
I don't remember.
But it's like, if you can't sell those, so children didn't buy them. Adults, obviously, adult collectors didn't buy them. They piled up, so distribution suffered as a consequence. There's a knock-on effect, but the prime root of the fact that those toys did not sell is not because kids didn't want them. Because kids, Spider-Man toy lines, Batman toy lines, even Transformers now with Bumblebee, kids buy the popular characters. Kids didn't care about He-Man. Kids didn't buy He-Man. He-Man didn't get restocked. All that can be done with He-Man now is that they can sell adult toys to adult collectors via online. It's pretty pathetic. In fact, I have to salute them to some extent for the fact that they even soldier on doing it.
Well, the only way that they can is by, one, having shitty maintenance of their website, and two, by horribly, horribly overcharging and raping the people that actually want to buy that stuff.
Well, what price are they now?
Oh, yeah.
They are
25, I think.
Yeah.
I didn't think $20.
They were 20 especially. At one point.
Yeah. But you have to buy a subscription as well.
That's an alternate thing, isn't it?
If you want to make sure that you don't miss a figure, because they sell out quick, because they have such limited quantities, I guess, you can do the subscription, and then you're guaranteed, I think, like, there's like so many figures in the year that you're guaranteed.
But you're paying for those figures before you even know what they are.
Yeah, you don't even know what they are.
You're paying in advance.
$150 or $200 in advance for not knowing if you're going to get anything you want.
But let's be honest. I mean, if they were mass producing those figures, they would not be $25. They would be...
Well, no, not if they were in store. No, but I mean, I didn't think $20, $25 is an especially bad price for something that's being produced.
It's not bad if you're buying, like, one figure, but if you're getting them all, it gets pretty expensive.
Yeah, and that's...
I was going to say, what a terrible system, because, you may not want all of them. But, I mean, I think He-Man fans would probably agree that they are, or maybe they would be in denial over the fact that as a fandom, they're so starved for it that they buy anything they get. They buy anything that's off of them.
That's kind of what I mean.
Let's say Transformers went down this route, and they don't sell. I wouldn't complain if Hasbro was selling something through a website, as long as that website doesn't make it so that your credit card gets stolen.
I would
be fine with that.
There's a whole other thing, isn't there?
The thing about FunPub is at least that up until this year, you could still always had time to buy the toy if you wanted.
Yeah.
It didn't disappear 5 minutes after it went up.
But I go back to the question.
Boy,
like,
did I pick the wrong year to buy that toy?
Everything comes down to property ownership, though. I mean, is this something that DC acquired that they had? Is this something that Warner Brothers has or something?
I think it's the Mattel DC connection, because Mattel puts out the DC toys. Yeah. And Maddie Collector does a lot of stuff with DC stuff on their website. So it makes perfect sense, you know, and then okay. they package the toys together through Toys R Us. It makes perfect sense, honestly. Hey, who are you going to put out your comic? Marvel. No, no, it's going to be DC Comics.
Yeah.
Well, I forget who was doing the last Masters of the Universe comic. Was it Image? No, it wasn't Image, was it? Or was it just independent?
It was one of the third independent party places. Yeah, I don't know which
it was. I don't remember what. They went out of business, and anyway, that's why the comic stopped, you know. I mean, nothing about the 2002.
I don't know. I think maybe they were looking across the aisle and said, look at Dynamite. They're putting out those Voltron comics. You know, maybe we can, maybe should try that out, you know.
Is that Voltron comics selling, JD? You still buying them?
Least, no. You know, God, no. Hey, you're one, in fact, just came Voltron, out this week.
They've been wise enough to realize that their audience is the adult market.
Yeah.
And they're selling their Voltron through Maddie Collector, and that's it, you know. They didn't make a play for the young market anymore. You know, it's sad. I mean, I don't know why, but I bought an awful lot of the 2002 Masters of the Universe figures. They were very nice figures.
Yeah.
But, you know, got to the end of it all, and I was like, what?
Were you a fan of, like, the old Masters of the Universe? Were you, like, a fan of that back in the day?
I was when I was a child.
Yeah.
I tried to rewatch some of it.
Somewhere.
I actually spent money buying some of the single DVDs. I think I got it three discs in. Three separate DVD purchases in. Convinced to buy it because it had really, really nice extras like good fan commentaries, story Bible yeah. extracts.
Really the DVD good. Box sets are really, really nice as far as like but, fans.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the show is not.
I'll put it this way. Somewhere, my mother has a picture of me with my He-Man role play set with my power sword and my shield standing in front of the television watching He-Man in nothing but my underwear. So, yeah, I was obviously a big fan when I was a kid. But Transformers then took over, and that was pretty much it for He-Man.
You see, I mean, the thing about He-Man was, I mean, really, like, the only thing that He-Man has going for it, and I'm not trying to rag on it here, but the thing He-Man has behind it, and a big part of its success, is that it was first. It was the first show they made after the regulations got changed that stopped the advertising of toys through animated programming. Then some actual, like, shows with a good premise came along and stomped the balls out of He-Man.
Yeah.
And He-Man has... He-Man is not susceptible to... I mean, I think the 2002 series really proved that He-Man, and indeed the new adventures, proved that He-Man is not susceptible to reinvention the way Transformers is.
Right.
To pull a random example, you know, Transformers is, broadly speaking, Autobots wage their battle to destroy the evil forces of the Decepticons. You may tick that, and you may spin that as you see fit. He-Man is He-Man and the Masters of the Universe battle to stop Skeletor from stealing the powers of Castle Grayskull. And, you know, you're kind of locked into your whole scenario there, and when they tried to change it for the new adventures, it off in space, and even though I used to think the cartoon was quite good, Gampa Lane Skeletor was awesome, Gary Chalk was He-Man, it was good. I enjoyed that show. It was something resembling a teenager, but regardless, it didn't work because it was weird sci-fi He-Man. It didn't go down so good.
Well, I mean, the thing is that it doesn't have something else. You know, I mean, at least for, like, Transformers, yeah, it's Autobots fighting Decepticons, but it's also like, oh yeah, and they transform.
Yeah.
You know? It's like there's a gimmick that's involved as well. With He-Man, it's just like, here's a guy in his underwear. Yeah.
Is the problem that it's fantasy, basically, and like kids just aren't into it?
Yeah, I mean,
it's not techie enough, it's not now.
Well, He-Man came out about the same time as Conan the Barbarian. It was basically Conan the Barbarian for kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And that has, like, completely gone out of, you know, the thought process at
this time.
It's
not even the fantasy of today, like, well, okay, I know. I say the fantasy of today, air quotes. You compare it to, say, Lord of the Rings, which was, you know, kind of conk. When did the first Lord of the Rings film come out?
2003, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, so kind of concurrent with He-Man, you know, and that was Megamongous, you know. He-Man is really simplistic fantasy. It's real barbarians and dragons. And that just don't fly. You know, that's just not...
That's not what people are after.
No surprise that didn't. I mean, He-Man really lacks it lacks a coherent universe, even. You know, it is magic and technology as the plot demands, as any writer randomly sees fit at any one episode. I mean, and so is that
the problem that we're running into with Thundercats now? Because like I haven't kept up with it. But Thundercats, has it been canceled or has it not? I haven't kept up with the news on it.
All we know really is there's nothing new in the next year, but it could be back.
It's
like it is because like I go to my local Walmart and all the Thundercats toys are on clearance.
Oh, that's because they're not selling.
well, you know what?
Toys aren't selling. Does that mean chicken?
I know you can go to a bunch of other podcasts to hear me rail on Thundercats. You know, I really want to like it, but I think its prime failing is the fact that it has spent all its time, the whole first half of the season up until the last two episodes, only Lion-O and the guest spot characters ever receive any character. There's nobody else had a plot around them. Mm-hmm. Hence, the viewing audience, children, were not given any insight into these characters. Kids aren't stupid. You know, you have to give kids a reason to like the characters on the screen, even if it's just a simplistic cartoon personality. Nobody has a personality on Thundercats. No. They never have anything to do with them. They're all, yes, Lion-O, no, Lion-O, please, thank you, Lion-O, can I have another?
Right.
Don't do that, Lion-O, whatever. And it's no surprise that kids did not buy the toys off the back of that, if that is the case. I mean, we will see if it comes back. It wouldn't surprise me if it didn't. I would really like it to, and I also think that the tech and magic thing has been very badly misjudged. It's like, I get what they were doing. The flip of the idea is that the cats are the magic users and Mumra has the tech, because I mean, I really like the visual reinvention of Mumra's pyramid as a spaceship and everything.
Yeah, but I like all the changes and stuff that they did with it to kind of flip it
but
up.
But it's also immensely dumb because Mumra is also a sorcerer for some reason.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you the reason is because he's a fucking animate mummy.
Yeah.
That's magic fantasy stuff, you know.
Yeah, he just has a Mumra mobile. That's all I care about.
I know that's the stupid thing, though. What is that?
So
it's a Mumra mobile. There's nothing bad about that.
So all of this in mind, though. Why are they doing a Masters of the Universe comic?
Well, I'll probably buy it, honestly. I'm a little tempted to buy it myself, to be honest. But the audience of He-Man is the audience that reads comics. So this is not going to capture any new fans. No. This is not even going to bother being targeted at children. They are just directing the comic at the fans that are already there, which is the same with G.I. Joe and the same with Transformers.
I guess it's just an excuse to sell something then.
It's only a six-issue miniseries. Yeah. It's not like they're bursting in with an ongoing He-Man or whatever.
Yeah, that would be really crazy.
The premise is a little trite, but, you know, it kind of says an awful lot that let's do the He-Man comic by completely not doing the traditional He-Man setup.
Yeah. So we're guaranteed to, one, confuse people that know very little about He-Man, and two, piss off people that do like He-Man.
Yeah, you know, that's the idea, that it's like, what? What is this, He-Man? Turn head.
Yeah, and the hardcore fans will be like, smash!
Oh, I don't think so. I think they'll get it.
No? Okay. All right. Any other news?
There was some new Avengers TV spots this week.
Mmm. I hear it's smashingly good.
So is this like a thing or something? Because you guys made it out like this huge thing that's going on. It's like, oh, you have to see this. You have to see this. Everybody's talking about it. I thought it was good, but still, I mean,
Hey. Two words, all right? Hulk, smash. That's all you need. I mean,
it's integrated. Like, my trousers just came apart in pieces. They were just
Hulk smashed back in the Incredible Hulk years ago. Okay, that happened. Okay,
no,
he said
it's
it.
Not, no, no, it's not the sentence. It's not the line. It's the grin he comes out with immediately thereafter.
Yay!
About to have as much fun as I am having watching the Hulk. I mean, I watched it at work, you know, so I had to be suppressed, you know, because people around me. But, you know, the reaction I had was, and my hands went to my mouth, you know. I watched it at home. I was sitting on the floor just because I just turned the laptop on and sitting on the floor. Put it on there. And before I knew what had happened, I had flopped onto one side, curled up in a ball, and gone, I watched it a few more times just to check, And I'm physically, like, incapable of not having that reaction. Hulk, smash.
It's great. You should watch it. Check it out. We're getting close. Oh, yeah,
that's not too far now. Avengers is, well, it's
for you.
So you get it in April, don't you?
Yeah, well, it's 4 weeks away for you. About just under 4 weeks away for you guys.
We
it's
get
just
May
under.
4th is when we're getting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not.
It's gonna be a busy week for me. I've got BotCon. I come back. I've got a friend coming to visit, and then Avengers. I'm very excited.
Right. Well, that's, so see, well, we're not doing a show that weekend, so you won't even have to listen to me lord it over you.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly why we're skipping too.
I don't want to hear your disappointment, and I also at the same time don't want to hear your happiness. I don't want to hear that.
You don't want to hear anything. There will be nothing.
Yeah,
just nothing.
Sweet.
I've really been enjoying the trailer so far because we do keep seeing a little extra every time, but it still feels like we really haven't seen very much of it.
I know. I still have no. I mean, and I was talking about this before the show. But, you know, even for the trailers and stuff that we've seen, it's like, okay, we got the Helicarrier, sweet, you know, there's, you know, the Hulk stuff, whatever. I still have no idea, like, who these extra people are that Loki's working with. You know, we're not really clear on that.
I think I got spoiled on it, but...
Well, I don't want to know. you know, but there's still a lot of things that have been kind of left open. So, you know, other than knowing that the team comes together, which is going to happen anyway...
Yeah.
Awesome. That's it, you know, so I'm excited.
Yeah.
Hopefully, I mean, it's like slowly, I hope some of these, like, films can figure out. It's like, hey, don't give away your whole movie, you know, in the trailers. And I know that's more on
like,
marketing.
I was afraid to watch more trailers because I've already seen so many, and I was like, do I want to keep watching? Is one of them going to, like, give away too much? Because, like, I already watched a lot of footage, but hopefully that's, like, 5 minutes or like 10 minutes of the movie or something.
Oh yeah, I'm sure there's plenty of good Stark lines and stuff that we haven't even gotten close to. So
yeah, I mean, because there have been a lot of moments in the trailers, like when the Helicarrier comes up out of the I want to. I'm more interested now in what I haven't seen. You know,
yep.
Must watch all the films in a little marathon, like in the week building up.
Oh, yes, that's a good idea.
Please don't make this be a Green Lantern Lord.
Don't! You're gonna jinx it.
God,
say its name. We can forget it existed if you don't say its name.
Let's say it three times, it will appear, and it'll cut my throat. Right.
But hey, you know, speaking of Green Lantern, that's a cartoon on television.
Mm.
Oh. Are you warming up to this week? Because I've been enjoying it.
I warmed up to it this week. No, I enjoyed the pilot. Didn't think a lot of the subsequent two or three episodes, but this week, I really quite enjoyed, you know, because we got... Well, we got Mogo. That was awesome. Spoilers, it was Mogo. Yeah. But it's like, I didn't even realize that's what it was happening until like about halfway through the episode. And I was like, wait a minute.
I thought it was happening, but I was like thinking, but no, it can't be. Wouldn't they already have him by this point? But
yeah, I mean, that's one of those wobbly things where it's like, they do, they don't. You don't know what exists and what doesn't in Green Lantern lore. It's the same sort of problem I always thought Wolverine and the X-Men had. You never knew what existed and what didn't. Oh, they'd fought Mr. Sinister, they'd fought Magneto, the Genosha existed, but they'd never met the Hellfire Club of the Phoenix. You know, just you don't know what you're supposed to know and what you're not already with it. But
it sort of feels like you would have had a better base of knowledge if, like, the first episode would have been like Hal gets the ring or something. Because then, like, you know, you're at the beginning. You know,
yeah, you know, yeah, yeah. You're right there at the start, but also like having Saint Walker in there, and like clearly establishing that set up for the future. So we've really got our first subplot with this episode as well.
Yeah,
cool, you know, like
I saw him and I didn't immediately think, hey, that's Saint Walker, and then the way he started talking and the way he started, I was like,
oh, it's Saint Walker. Okay, I gotta watch this then. I'm sold. I'm no terribly behind on all my, like, you know, animation as far as Marvel and DC goes, so
yeah.
Well, we've got Spectacular Spider-Man. It's probably a bigger talking point. Now, that launched. That
you mean Ultimate?
Ultimate.
Sorry, don't call it
Spectacular. He's trying to wish.
I'll
call it Spectacular Spider-Man.
Ultimate Spider-Man. Ultimate Spider-Man. I do apologize. My brain just, you know. What's that? Good Spider-Man cartoon? Spectacular Spider-Man cartoon. Yeah, Ultimate Spider-Man's first two episodes aired last week. Now, the third's aired today, but have you seen it, Triplet?
I've seen it, yeah.
Okay, I haven't seen it, so I hopefully it'll be up for me to watch now before I go to bed this evening.
If you saw the first two episodes, it's more of the same.
That's good. Well, what do you think?
I'm not digging it so far. I mean, is there something wrong with me?
I think I'm basically digging it, but that's because I am definitely approaching it from a position of lowered expectations, because I know it'll never be as good as Spectacular was. And more to the point, it is like tangibly skewing younger than any recent Marvel cartoon, short of Superhero Squad.
Yeah.
It's definitely targeted at a younger audience. And I don't
hate it. I see potential in it. It's just there's a couple of things, like I think that they do that Teen Titans thing way too often. It almost gets annoying, you know.
The cutaways, you know what
I mean?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they do it like for everything. Oh my God, there's so many of them in this new episode.
Well, I mean, that's the problem with them, is that they are too numerous. But I think on their own merits, they're quite well staged on their own merits. You know, they know enough to be brief. And you generally get a good, like,
and,
good
and then
ha!
I don't
laugh
get
out of them.
A lot of laughs out of them. Like, there's like been two or three so far that I've been like, you know, it just like caught me off guard. Like the Mexican Spider-Man, I think, just caught me off guard, and I just it's like,
well, know, that was funny, you know.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, well, okay, no, I suppose actually, for anybody listening who hasn't watched it, the shtick is that this is Spider-Man as he is recruited into S.H.I.E.L.D. to be trained by Nick Fury along with a team of other young heroes, including Nova, Iron Fist, Pyro Man, and White Tiger, to be the ultimate Spider-Man. And his day-to-day life aside from that, there's some kind of creepiness going on. Norman Osborn wants Spider-Man for Oscorp rather than to let S.H.I.E.L.D. have him. And he's got Dr. Octopus on staff, who is his liaison with the supervillain world, trying to make this happen, or make Spidey not be connected to S.H.I.E.L.D. It's kind of like, it's like part Malcolm in the Middle, part
it's
Ali.
Very Malcolm in the Middle, now that I think about it. Yeah,
it's like, it's got the moments where Spidey like turns and addresses the audience, and that I'm cool with. I am cool with the idea.
Yeah,
I mean, because I'm thinking Malcolm in the Middle, and I'm thinking young, nerdy teenage guy. It works for me. I'm making that connection. I wouldn't be surprised if, like, maybe that if they were to say they had that in mind when they came up with the idea. You know, him addressing the audience and explaining his world for you, instead of having to go through the motions of telling the origin story of all the characters over and over again. That we have Spidey.
I did like that about like the first episode. How he would turn, it's like, oh yeah, this is like this person, and this is how I know him, and all that. I like that, you know, that works, you know. It's just
But then in the Ally McBeal category, it's got these little cutaways. I call them Ally McBeal because they're a little more Ally McBeal than they are Family Guy, but I imagine more nerds are making Family Guy comparisons. Little cutaway fantasies that Spidey has, and which I think are quite, you know, well timed and know enough to be quite brief in and of themselves, but are a bit over numerous.
Oh yeah, I mean, they do it kind of too often, to the point that like you really don't know if the story's actually moving forward at sometimes. Because like in the new episode, I'm not gonna say what happens in it, but like they go to take down this villain that's in it, and it's a pretty big deal, you know. And I'm thinking, this dude's like gonna murder the shit out of you guys, and like every 5 seconds you get this Spidey on with a jetpack
There's no sense of peril. It does sort of beacon the threat a little. I mean, I think it's surer of itself out of the gate than Teen Titans was, because people are making a lot of comparisons with these little art quirks the way Teen Titans had. But Teen Titans, when it started, it really didn't actually know how to implement that stuff. I'll never forget the first episode of Teen Titans. Robin and Cyborg have an argument over Cyborg's performance in the fight. And it's told in the form of them silhouetted, shouting at one another, and the other Titans as little tiny chibis, like terrified, cowering, watching them argue. And I'm like, that's not selling this argument as a serious thing. That's turning it into a joke. And that kind of continued for the whole first season of Teen Titans, that they never knew tonally when to match up that stuff with the rest of the show. Now, they got a handle on it later, but Spidey, I think, has a much better handle on that out of the gate. I could see it being been played as a
That's
song,
not my only
know?
Real problem with it. Also, like my problem, like I was telling Brian today, and I don't want to come down on it because it's not bad. It's just like I'm still holding that torch for Spectacular Spider-Man and that. I know
everybody.
I know that's what that is, but like I was telling him, it's like Spider-Man and his Amazing Friends. If his Amazing Friends was made up of all these obscure Marvel characters that Bendis is just like totally in love with, because that's what it basically is.
His Amazing Friends
are Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and White Tiger. White Tiger, who was a character that made a pretty big appearance in his Daredevil run. We know he loves Luke Cage, New Avengers, Iron Fist, of course.
I don't
and then
know.
There's
I'm not inclined to blame Bendis for that, because Bendis isn't some dominating factor in the production of the thing. You know, I mean, that's a new White Tiger who's appearing in Avengers Academy right now, you know. That's a new Nova who's just appeared in AVX.
Yeah.
It just seems like a strange list of characters. You know what I mean? They don't really fit, you know, with, kind of like, we're going to put you with this team of the characters.
Nova and White Tiger work, I feel, to me. It's de-aging Power Man and Iron Fist. That's the weird one to me. You know, taking them back.
And again, you know, I don't dislike the characters and how they're being done, I guess, in the show. It's just they're kind of weird characters to put with Spider-Man, you know, to put like up front there and like, here's the stars, you know. It's like here's Spider-Man and here's like this character you've never heard of. You know, that, you know, also can, you know, has powers and does all this other stuff. And, hey, go buy his action figure, you know?
Yeah, that's one fact that can't be denied is that it is clearly, and along with the skewing younger, it's a very toyetic show. You know, I'm sure Spidey's going to wind up with situational suits that he'll wear an awful lot.
There's another way to look at this, though, in terms of being multicultural. I mean, obviously, Well, I mean, okay. You're saying no, except the characters you're mentioning as obscure are one of them is black, one of them is Latino.
Right, one's just black. Yeah, she wears a full black, face mask.
But that doesn't mean the character isn't Latino. I'm just saying,
Yeah, I could definitely
Tiger, see her without the mask, though, because she goes to the
school.
Yeah,
that's true. Either. Well, yeah, okay. So, I mean, an Iron Fist,
he's not actually
Asian, but he's got the Zen spiritualism stereotype covered as well there, you know. So, I mean, that's probably, and I hadn't put all those pieces together, but that seems about right now that you mention it.
So, cool. That's fantastic, but we should probably do comics.
Well, hang on, just before we get to the comics, there's also no amount of rationalization that will make Spider-Man having a motorcycle make sense.
What? Of course he does. Haven't you seen the toys? He always has a motorcycle.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, that's so toyetic, and it shoots webs and it rides along the webs.
Before we move away from it, though, the animation is awesome. I will say that. Yeah, the animation looks really, really nice. It's a really well-animated show.
I mean,
I
still find that it was also able to strike the important balance of Spider-Man. It's a sort of balance I think we've mentioned before when we've talked about Slot Spider-Man, is that as much fun as he may be having when he's Spidey, quipping, beating the villains or whatever, some aspect of his life always does suffer. And in this one, it's that he forgets to buy the cake Aunt May has told him to get so they can celebrate Uncle Ben's birthday. You know, and you're like, oh, nice job, Spidey. Oh, no. You know, there is that sense of, oh, fucked it up again, Spidey, you know. And I like what they've done with Aunt May in this one as well.
Every woman, and she can do everything.
Yeah, she does yoga, and she bowls. She's busy. Not that she's an every woman, just that she's active and busy, and she's not some doddering old wheat cake cooking the house, just shopping.
Yeah, she's not this character that could, like, die at any second.
Yeah,
you know, just looking at her. She's, like, doing everything, you know?
And that's good, because Aunt May, that's been a trend, doing Aunt May's in recent years. You know, the Ultimate Spider-Man, of course, did the more sturdy, younger Aunt May, and it was Spectacular. Even had an active, like, more assertive Aunt May in it as well. You know?
Yeah, I liked her in that. The whole thing where he had the cell phone, he had to call her all the time. You know, that was kind of well done. I liked that. That was, man, I wish they would just make season 3. Damn it, I miss that.
I know. I mean, you know, it's not like Spectacular was actually killed to make way for this.
Yeah.
but it really feels like it was. No, it's not the ratings were bad. It was the whole change was happening. That was a Warner Brothers made show, you know, and then Disney.
Yeah,
got
it was
Marvel.
Like on WB or CW or something, yeah. And then it moved to yeah. Disney XD, and then like yeah. it just
and
I don't even
Disney,
know where it
Disney bought came Marvel, out. You know, so that was yeah. going to have to stop so the new Disney Marvel show could be made, and but it doesn't, you know, stop the feeling like it died to make way for the same way yeah. that it took a long time to for it to not feel like animated died to make way for Transformers Prime, you know. And it's also kind of dumb in that, you know, we know Ultimate Spider-Man has been in the works for an awfully long time because they were talking about it not long after Spectacular yeah. died, but it's taken so long to actually come out that, like, the comic it's named after now has nothing to do with it. It's a completely different character in the comic yeah. that it's named after. And speaking of that comic, maybe we should talk about it.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Let's do that. Go for it, Chris Triplett. Move along.
We'll talk about that. And by the way, Avengers is still awesome in Season 2. Watch it, Jay.
Yes.
I'm working on it.
Motherfucker.
Oh, okay. No, I did watch the first episode of The New Avengers, so I am caught up on that, so... I didn't watch the one from this morning, so.
Awesome.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
Okay, Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, number 9. Well, I don't think I've talked about Ultimate in a while. I think it's been a while. This issue basically just starts off with, it's kind of like a continuing from the last issue where Spidey had a tangle with the Reiner, and it's funny because like he's all tied up in the reins, and the cops show up and they're giving him a hard time, and I guess Miles, you know, he's never fought the Reiner before. This would be the first time, yeah. wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
First time fought nearly everybody.
And he beat him, but you know, he doesn't know how to get out of the reins. You know, he's all tied up. And he just gets like this funny little scene from this cop that's kind of giving him a hard time, you know, and basically, you know, saying, you know, get the hell out of here, kid. You know, you shouldn't be here, and making jokes about how, you know, at least the old Spider-Man had gone through puberty yet, and then he's like, no, man, I'm like 30, and you know, I hit puberty. And like, you know, the cop's like, maybe this morning, you know. It's just a funny little scene, and I don't remember, like, this guy, he wasn't in, like, the old Ultimate Spider-Man books, was he? I mean, did he show up in
to appear. I think he started to appear after it turned over into, after it turned Miles into Ultimate Comics Spider-Man. No, before it was Miles, but when it was Ultimate Comics Spider-Man after Ultimatum. Because yeah. remember, Jean DeWolf was police captain, and then she turned out to be in the Kingpin's pocket, and this guy took her place, I believe.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, because like he mentions, like, you know, he had worked with Spider-Man before, and
yeah, yeah.
And all this stuff, and I couldn't remember. I don't know if maybe he was just there and they just didn't have as prominent a part as he did in this issue, because he's like taking up like 3 pages with this conversation yeah. that he has at the beginning. But the scene changes, and we've got.
The best part of this though is like when he finally goes over to the Ringer, he's like, okay, and he starts reading his rights, and the Ringer tries to run, so he tases him. Yeah. And he's like, all right, so anyway, like I was saying, you have the right to remain silent. And, you know, I really hope you do that, but obviously you probably won't. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah. That was just funny.
The Reiner's awesome. The Reiner needs to be, like, in the Amazing Spider-Man movie. Him or The Spot. I would take either one at this point.
Those are the guys that you want to see at the start of a film, like a sequel, with Spidey just punching them out outside a bank and yeah. then moving on.
That's what Spider-Man 3 totally needed. It needed, like, a Reiner.
It's like the Shocker
Spot.
Or somebody getting punched out.
Yeah. I'm surprised the Shocker wasn't in it, because he was like in every video game and anything animated that has ever been made for Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Why was he not in one of those movies?
I know, he is the him and the Rhino are like the obligatory first 5 page beat up trying to rob a bank guy before we get to the plot.
But like in the comic, it switches scenes, and we've got like the Prowler, which we now know is Miles' uncle. You know, we found that out a couple issues back. And he's got some stuff going down with this mobster guy or something from Mexico, who's the, I guess the ultimate version of the Scorpion. Even though I thought we already had a Scorpion,
it was one of Peter's clones. Yeah,
he was kind of crazy, and he had a Scorpion costume. I remember it. But like, yeah. I guess he's now the ultimate Scorpion, and he's just basically some really big guy that's tough as nails, and he has this big old chain with the hook on it, And there must be something else going on with him, because basically he's like waiting at the Tinkerer's apartment or something, where I think maybe in the last issue or the issue before.
It was the last issue.
Prowler killed him because Tinkerer was did he find – he didn't find out that
– No, he figured that the Tinkerer had enough pieces to that he could put it together that –
He was putting it together, but I don't think he had quite figured it out yet. Yeah. And so he killed him, shut him up, and now Scorpion's waiting for him here. And there's just this big fight, and it's pretty cool because, all this stuff that the Tinkerer's got, all these weapons he's been building with first villains, Prowler uses to take him out, these electrical things, and then looks like he falls into, the Vulture's wings or something, and he shoots blades at this guy. And he kills all of the Scorpion's guys.
Yeah.
But, Scorpion gets shocked. He's, cut up with blades, and he's still coming. It's like... The guy's you met a human or
there is something else going on. Yeah.
Something going on with this guy, because no matter what he does, this dude should be dead 1,000 times over. And
I remember when we heard he was going to be in it, and before the issue came out, I was wondering if it was just a clone who just had gone to hide out in Mexico.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe he bulked up and got some tats. You know, I mean, it could still be him.
God.
But something else is going on with this guy to the point that the Prowler has to run. He takes those Vulture wings and he gets out of Dodge. But then you got a scene a little bit later on where Miles is trying to. Get back to the school, and there's this guy at the school, one of the teachers or something. I'm not sure if we've run into this guy before. He's really questioning what's going on with Miles, almost to the point that is there something going on with him? He's really interested in where he's at.
We've just seen that this school is really uppity.
Yeah.
And really tight when it comes to this.
I think it's the shot of his eyes. When he finds him, he snuck back in. They tell him, oh, he's in the bathroom. He's been in the bathroom all day. And he goes to check the bathroom. He's not there. And then he comes back and he sees that he's in the room. And he just kind of blows him off and says, I was in the bathroom and I just came back, And he just has this look on his eyes watching you, sir.
Well, this is the obligatory thing. You've got to have this. When he's not living at home and you don't have him trying to dance around Aunt May, he's not trying to do it for her sake, but for his own sake, you do have to kind of have this aggressive guy who's like, no, I got my eye on you, boy. Sort of thing.
Yeah. Which, by the way, the art in this issue is great.
Isn't it? Oh, now, this is by David Marquez. It's not Sarah Pacelli.
Damn close.
Yes, it's doing a very good match.
It's very
for her.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love these faces.
Yeah. She's obviously busy working on Spider-Man right now, I would guess, and that's why she hasn't done all of this arc. I would be quite happy to see this guy hang around, because it's very nice looking. Yeah. Not that I didn't enjoy Samney's issues from the first two parts of this arc. Really enjoyed Samney's issues, but they are, there's something else. They're a different style that you probably don't. It doesn't sing Ultimate Comic to you for Samney's issues, but this does. This looks the part. Really, it's really nice work.
Yeah,
very nice colors on it too. Actually, the coloring is a big point of the colors on this. Justin Ponser, no, the standard Ultimate Spidey colorist, but he's always good. We never give the colorists enough credit, except for Dave Stewart over Batwoman. But colors on this are a big part. Very, very good looking book. This.
Yeah. I seem to recall someone wanted to give credit to colorists, but was shot down and told that was ridiculous.
Name me too!
Oh, we'll make up for it next year.
Okay.
Name too!
But, just one last little thing about this issue at the end was just really cool, where Miles is, in bed, and he's, talking to Genki. Is it Genki? Is that how you say that?
I've always been Genki, something like that.
He's talking to him with his cell phone, and he gets a message from his uncle. And then we're starting to see, something's going on here. Because I think earlier, maybe in the last issue or something, he was talking about meeting with him and having a talk with him, and Miles is just kind of dodging him. And he's you now find out he wants him to do something.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Says, Black killed by any deal. Other name really was the implication that he was like, I know your deal. Maybe yeah. come talk to me if you don't want someone else to find out about it. But here he's saying, like, okay.
He says, I'll make a deal with you. You take care of one thing for me, and I'll leave you alone forever. You know, and now we're, like, setting up. Yeah, something's going on with this. And
who's all 24 here on the last row of panels? Two. Boop, continue.
And again, very like the art. So. Look at his face here. I mean, that's just awesome.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's such a good book. I mean, this is sort of like the Spider-Man I want versus what we're getting in the cartoon. Which I don't want to knock the cartoon because again, we've gotten the you know Spider-Man serious stuff, the you know responsibility and all that. In cartoons, you know, enough. And I think what they're doing in the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon is probably the right choice because it's the Brave and the Bold type choice, you know. It's a good choice. It's just, man, this is like the Spider-Man I like. And I really like this
I want to know what's going on with the roommate.
Yeah.
Oh, Judd?
I feel like I can't even remember what this guy's name is, actually, to be honest.
Judge. Judge is his name.
Oh, right? Yeah. Judge, yeah.
Yeah.
This is like the second time now, at least, where they've tried to blow him off, and he's made it clear that he knows they're obviously hiding something. And I'm wondering what's going to come of that. You know, is he going to be a supervillain? What's going to happen? Is he going to be like the I don't know. I'm interested to find out what happens.
You don't think like he'll just like wind up being like another you know family cast member type dude? Like something happens.
He's a member of the supporting cast. Maybe he'll find out about it. But you know, if he finds out about it, what does he bring to the table that Yankee doesn't already? They are all geniuses working in a genius school, you know.
Yeah.
You know, what is he gonna offer if that is the position? And I'm not knocking the character or anything. So I'm not saying they have told me enough about him. They've told me just enough that I'm quite curious to see what happens with this guy next.
Now, we haven't gotten any villains for Miles yet. Like, it's specific Miles villains, right? It's just been... Well, I guess...
I don't know if we will, really. Maybe. Well, I guess... Well, Scorpion's going to be one. Yeah. Well, they'll just probably be ultimized versions of pre-existing characters, really. The Ultimate Universe isn't given to new villains. But I suppose Ultimate Spidey already went through the gamut of classic Spidey villains, so, you know, short of Ultimate Big Wheel, I don't really know what...
I'd like to see some new villains, like, you know, not something like this, just like an amazing Spider-Man guy made into Ultimate, like they did before. But,
Ultimate
you know,
facade.
Yes. God. But, like, when I get, you know, you get worried when they make a new Spider-Man villain because they're not as good as the 60s Spider-Man
villains. One of those rogues galleries that is not easily added to, like Batman, not easily added to because of how classic his villains are.
Yeah.
But that's Ultimate Spider-Man. Cool. It's good. Keep reading it. It's awesome.
All right. Sweet. I am going to basically do a quick review of JLI, because since most of you don't love it as much as I do, I don't guess I need to spend too much time on it. So, issue is rolling from where we had, where the story has been going, which is the destruction of the Hall of Justice and who's really attacking the JLI. The first of this is sort of the introduction of Batwing, who seems to be joining the group. He had happened to be at the hospital in this scene and ends up helping Booster fight this new villain, Lightweaver, who can make light constructs. Sort of like lanterns, except rainbow-y.
Okay.
Wow, he's got the power over the complete emotional spectrum.
Wasn't there like a Superman villain that could do that? That was shit, a shitty villain.
Probably, and I would bet it might have been Dan Jurgens as well. This is really kind of a tribute issue. The reason I'm really reviewing this is because there's a few little bits that are just classic Dan Jurgens, where it's like, you know, you give Dan reins, and he's like, "Cool, I'm gonna invent some villains," and they're like, "Whatever, Dan. Try that out." You know, it's like, I mean, there somewhere is a graveyard of Dan Jurgens invented villains that were used like in his books and were never seen again. The only one I think ever to reach any level of prominence was Doomsday, And that's simply
the only one I remember for
simply
I read his book for years too.
Yeah. And so anyway. So Batwing fights, you know, Lightweaver. And the creation of the next villain in here. There's a cutaway scene where one of the bombers has been arrested, and he's in the back of the paddy wagon with, you know, the officers, and they're kind of shaking him down, and he gives them their name, which, you know, doesn't mean anything. And one of them starts like, dude, I don't feel so good. And, you know, they kind of sitting there for a minute. One of the other guys starts to get the shakes as the first guy is starting to do the, like, Temple of Doom thing where his face starts melting off. And then they're like, oh, I don't feel so good either. Yeah, so this guy apparently, and of course the car wrecks, and like this guy that's mostly bones at this point is like crawling out of the car begging for help and gets his skull crushed. Because apparently this guy is...
Hey, now, the art on that book's pretty good. Is that pretty graphic?
It is actually pretty graphic, because when he comes out, when he's climbing out of the back of his car, his, like, hand's sort of skeleton, and his face is skeletal, but there's still an eye in the socket.
God.
And then you see this foot come down on the skull as it's mid-crush.
Sounds like you're getting in Swamp Thing territory.
I know, it's a little graphic. But, who is doing the art on this? I can't remember. Aaron Lopresti.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I remember the art being pretty good on the book, and I enjoyed the art, and I was thinking, that's got to be pretty graphic, because the art was pretty nice, you know?
So then we get the massive three Dan Jurgen villain introduction here, where apparently the guy that was in the back of the wagon was Breakdown, who immediately states that he has the ability to break down elements into their more basic forms. We already had Lightweaver. He shows back up, and of course, you know, he had already stated what he can do. And then he turns to ask the other minion by name, and you, Intersec? And it's this chick with this weird glowing hair. And of course, she and Lightweaver can both fly. And apparently she can control... she's controlling the emergency bands and disseminating misinformation. So apparently she can, like, telepathically control communications networks and stuff.
What?
Oh my god, total, like, throwback. Dan Jurgen's villains created out of nowhere. They just have this odd power sets.
So
Spider-Man
has this
fought these guys in the late 90s.
Yeah, exactly.
So she has this power, and she decides, okay, there's no way I can use this to fight evil, so I'm going to use it to do bad things.
Exactly.
Because I can't do shit with this power.
And Breakdown looks like this odd combination of, like, Ragman and he's got this, like, black, wispy cloak sort of falling apart around him and all this, like, mechanical stuff. It's like, oh my god. It's like Jurgens drew the character model and just said, here you go, just draw this, you know?
He probably did.
Which he probably did, you know? It's like this, it's like Ragman meets Cyborg Superman is basically what this looks like.
So what you're saying is he's not creating no Thor girls. Man, Thor girl was awesome.
No, not yet.
Oh, yeah.
No.
What a novel concept.
Oh, yeah. Cool. And this girl totally has, like, long, glowing pink hair, too. Oh, my God. You have to pull up pictures of this if you've not seen.
God,
so,
I'd kill if Hasbro would make a Thor girl action figure right.
That would be awesome. Anyway, the rest of this is almost inconsequential, other than... the rest of the JLI that's back at the hospital ends up getting kicked out of the hospital. Not the ones that are checked in, but the ones that are loafing around. Basically, the UN is saying, look, you're not sanctioned anymore. Of which they figured out that... and they even said, like, you're not sanctioned anymore, and you can't even really work together anymore. And so it's August General and Iron, Guy, and Godiva. And they're trying to basically figure out what they're going to do, whether they're going to keep fighting or keep researching or whatever. Mid-conversation, a huge shadow overcasts them, and out of nowhere, and I mean, like, literally, I turned the page, and it was like, what? But not the good, what? Like, the bad, like, Why? OMAC!
Oh, well, that's cool.
OMAC?
OMAC!
Okay.
I am OMAC! Literally says that. I am OMAC as he crushes into the ground underneath him.
To be fair, nobody knows who he is. Nobody was reading his book. You do have to have the introduction.
Exactly. And he just beats the shit out of them, and that's the end of the issue.
What?
Why not?
Yeah. But I will say that there
is... Wait, is OMAC a bad guy, or is he...
I have no idea. Obviously, we weren't reading it, so we have no idea.
Who does he beat the shit out of? The JLI?
The August General and Iron Guy and Godiva. Grabs Godiva by the hair and uses her to beat the shit out of August General and Iron.
That makes sense. That makes sense. He thought they were villains, of course.
I have no idea.
I've never heard of them before, so
Beats the shit out of... throws, like, hits Guy with the door of an ambulance, and then grabs Lady Godiva by her hair and smacks August General and Iron with her. I mean... It's awesome. It's really awesome. But the only other thing is there is a whole conversation between Booster and Batman and Batwing about Batman wanting to bring, you know, Batwing in to help because, you know, of his some of his resources and things. But this again
don't address the fact that Batman doesn't want the JLI to exist.
Well, and that's what I was coming back to. It's like this again just points out why Justice League seems like it's a book apart. Because it's not connecting with what's happening in the book. Batman is obviously still working with the JLI. And you can say, okay.
Maybe he doesn't want them to officially know that he works with the JLI. Maybe he's just like, yeah, to hell with the JLI. And then like he's like, hey, guys, I'm going to show you exactly what you need to do. I'm going to make you guys awesome. And then when they ask him, it's like, yeah, that JLI, they suck.
Yeah, because that's Batman. He has time to be like just a dick like that, you know. Like, that would totally be his thing, you know. I don't know. It's fun. I mean, it's fun in the sense that, like I said, it's totally like a Dan Jurgens tribute comic is really the way I'm viewing it. Because, like I said, it's like, where are you going to get these, like, crazy Dan Jurgens villains that show up for a minute and then vanish, you know? Where else are you going to get, you know, Booster? Nowhere, you know? He's not showing up anywhere else, so... I like it. I mean, I like it in a quirky sense. It's not obviously one of the best comics I'm reading right now, but there's just like that little place in my heart that just loves it. And OMAC now. I know nothing about OMAC, so I'm kind of excited. Maybe I'll learn.
Oh, I know a little about OMAC.
Something about OMAC. So. Anyway, cool. There you go. JLI. There you go. All right, Christopher Feely.
All right.
On to good stuff. Speaking of Superman,
comics. Speaking of Superman, which we weren't, Action Comics.
No, I think if you mentioned Dan Jurgens, I think you're mentioning Superman really by proxy. Well, I mean, he did kill
some people who have written Superman.
He did kill Superman.
Comics to my right. Well, it's Action Comics. It's the final part of Grant Morrison's first arc. So if they hadn't had that little interjection in the middle, then this would have been issue 6 of the standard. 6-issue storyline. The final part of the battle with the Collector of Worlds. In which Superman battles Brainiac to save the lives of Metropolis, which has been buckled by Brainiac. And it's just sort of... it's sort of awesome. Yeah?
Like, sort of? Okay. No. It's really awesome.
It's good.
I know. It's like, okay. I mean, it starts right out of the gate when, like, the very first thing in the very first panel that I noticed right away is you've got Glenn Morgan sitting there at the bar. Last issue, he was served a drink by the little man, and the little man's not there anymore, and it's the first thing I notice. And then two panels later, he's saying, you know, Morgan's losing it completely. It's like one of those films where they're dropped in hell and the devil's the bartender, and the detective, whose name I've forgotten off, says, there's no bartender here, sir. And I'm like, ah, I saw that. Yeah, he makes his pit. Like, you know, it's all starting to...
Yes.
You're paying attention. All the pieces are starting to become more and more apparent, you know. And, you know, Lex Luthor talks about how he came into contact with Brainiac. Picture two warring alien empires, one synthesized mechanic antiseptic, the other sweating biological germ-laden. So this is more on this idea. We heard about it last issue. We hear a little bit more about this issue. The idea that Earth... Something is coming for Earth. whatever it was that destroyed Krypton is coming for Earth as well. I don't know, maybe Brainiac just has like a timetable of planets that are inevitably going to be destroyed. I guess they haven't made it explicitly clear that it's the same force is going to destroy both of them.
Got the idea it was the same force. I just got the idea that, like, hey, Doom is coming to, you know, Earth, and hey, I need to save you guys. Let me save you. Put you in a bottle. But no.
I don't know. It's not so much. There's far less of an element of savior, as I almost want to read Brainiac with, your birth world is dead. I have to preserve you. Keep it milk and package.
Yeah.
There's a real nerdy MIB collector aspect to this.
Yeah.
I preserve the debris of Doom World. Stupid.
Wow. Only here on Fanboy Versus. Will you get Brainiac in Fanboy?
Oh, so stupid. Superman?
If they ever do Brainiac in a Superman movie, which they never will, that's his voice. That has to be it.
Yes.
That's like what Brainiac would be if he appeared like on Crypto the Superdog or a joke episode of Brave and the Bold or something.
Oh, God.
Maybe not with this kind of voice, but you could really see, like, if you wanted to put a comedic spin on Brainiac, that you would go that kind of like that episode of Futurama with all the Star Trek guests, with the energy being who turns out to be an adult collector of toys. Mom! I'm playing with my collectibles!
Oh, my God.
He was a child. He's not a child! He's 35! anyway, back to the story. Also, we saw at the end of the last issue that John Corbin has become wired into this cyborg slug body extension of... I mean, we call it Brainiac. It's not really... It's called the Collector of Worlds here, just the Collector, with the idea... The vague idea that it is... It started out as like a computer intelligence. I think they said it started out in the planet of Kolu, and it's just absorbed every planetary computer network that it's come across. It's absorbed the internet from Earth and various other things that it's named, as well as Brainiac. So that's
Luther even says it's the brain interactive something, doesn't he, at one point.
Yeah, well, I think that at one point comes a little later. When I turn to the page, I'll bring it out. But, you know, it's absorbed the Brainiac intelligence from Krypton. So they're able to keep the really smart idea from the animated series of Brainiac being a Kryptonian computer and marry it with this idea that it's a pre-existing life form as well. But John Corbin has also become wired up into him, and they're sharing minds, following on from the earlier issue where he took control of him. And he's not happy.
No. No.
You know, I could just sit here and I could just sum up all the awesome moments. You know, he's ranting and raving. You know, I read what she wrote about you. Now, hang on, let me get my Malcolm McDowell voice on. Malcolm McDowell was Metallo with the costume. I read what she wrote about you.
You don't want to go like the Brian Austin Green route from like Smallville.
No, nobody wants to go that route.
He Metallo in fucking Smallville.
He was Metallo in Smallville.
He was Metallo in Smallville. Yes, sir.
I should have lived the rest of my life without knowing that.
Oh yes, sir. Oh yes, sir.
So anyway, he knows what Lois wrote about him. Faster than a speeding bullet. That's Metropolis's latest wonder of tomorrow. Nothing's faster than a speeding bullet. And he puts up a gun to shoot him with. Yeah. I'll raise you light. Heat vision from the eyes melts the bullets before they even get anywhere near him. How awesome is that? This is awesome. This is a real action hero Superman. I mean, we've said it before. This is a very kind of quippy, young, hotshot Superman. But he is really like... This is Superman as played by... who is he as played by? I'm trying to think of like a young action hero. A young Bruce Willis.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
There's no good modern action heroes that I can compare him to.
They're all pretty lame now.
Remember when I said I would kill you last? I'll raise you light.
And they're not that young, are they?
No, like,
Jason
aren't
Statham's
young.
Gotta be getting pretty up at this point.
Yeah. But, Corbin's emotions are running so high, he's actually overriding Brainiac. He's overloading Brainiac's system. And Just flipping on here. I mean, here it is. Yeah, Luthor describes the alien intelligence as Brian Interactive Systems. So I guess that's the identifier it's using. Lewis shortens that to Brainiac. So there's that. And Glenn Morgan continues to lose it. You know, the little man is the devil, he says. I'm sort of getting pulled into this as I'm looking over it, you know. Fighting continues. Superman just...
I want to know something. When he gets knocked back into that one case, and then the suit changes. What's going on? I mean, maybe it's over my head or something. Like, why did it change? Did it change because...
And it changes between two different panels. Three different panels, really.
Well, they said that... they said something about this being, like, formal wear... Didn't they? I don't know.
Well,
I'm trying to remember where I picked this up now, but I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, was the idea that this was supposed to change to reflect other cultures or something whenever Kryptonians went to them?
But like the sun looking symbol on his chest, that's like old school Silver Age-ish right? Isn't that what it is? Yeah.
I don't know exactly what it is, but you know.
Yeah, I mean even between those two panels.
There's at least three different looks there, like when Metallo punches him and the suit turns white, mm-hmm. and then he crashes the thing, and then it's gold and green, and then it's red and white. I don't know what's going on there exactly.
I like it. I mean, for one thing, I think one of the things it does is that, you know, we kind of complain about some of these changes. Not complained so much, but it's like, okay, why? And this actually gives like a really good reason in this universe why Superman's costume is completely different, because it's not just, you know, something his mom's made. It's
why his suit's indestructible, which that was always like an old
Superman
thing. And you couldn't really explain that.
Yeah, but
you had those weird little John Byrne explanations back in Man of Steel, like about how he projects just a tiny, tiny force field of invincibility about as wide as his body hair, and that's why his costume never gets destroyed or anything. You know?
I really like that aspect. I really liked it. They explained that. His suit's indestructible, and it makes sense why Superman doesn't go like and fight somebody, and like every battle he ends, he's like naked because he's been burnt to death by something. You know what I mean? It makes sense.
They effectively gave him unstable molecule costume. So it's but it's all explained in here. So now it's like, okay, now you know why his costume looks different. Sweet.
I mean, I just like the idea that he got it here. We saw it at the end of the last issue. He got it from Brainiac's collection of Kryptonian ephemera. That's where it came from.
Yeah.
And that's a great idea. You know, when he pulled it on in the last issue, I was like, oh, that's where it came from. That was the reaction you have, you know. And I love that there's this bit here where Jimmy Olsen just sends texts and SOS to Superman, and it does the signal watch. Noise, because we had that little... way back in the first issue, they were talking about... I can't remember if his phone was making that noise or if they made a kind of a quip about that, but the idea that the phone connected them like the signal watch, I love that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Metallo turn. I'm calling him Met. Brainiac continues to refer to Corbin as Metal Zero. You know, Metallo. But to save Metropolis, Corbin turns on him. Save them if you can. And, you know, Superman reaches into the shattered bottle, and Glenn Morgan really starts to lose it. The hand of God!
Love it.
Yeah. You know, and then, here's the real line. You're required to complete the collection to secure its value and rarity. You're shipping you in mint condition. He actually says mint condition. He takes his rocket out of the thing. I mean, the death list of the multitude is what Brainiac describes it as. Krypton was number 205 of 333. Hang on, your world is... maybe it's Earth is 205. So, you know, whether or not it's still somebody or you know, I'm interested to find out what's going on there, you know. Brainiac really starts... Yeah. I mean, Superman puts Brainiac on guard by threatening to smash the rest of his collections if he doesn't back off, you know. I put King Collection of Worlds!
I am not going to be able to unhear this.
And then it seems like Brainiac...
I wonder if that was like going through Grant Morrison's head when he was writing his head in that voice.
I don't know necessarily the voice, but he's I think he's really definitely deliberately characterized him as a kind of manic obsessive kind of collector. It's like, you know, it is like those jokes you see in The Simpsons or whatever, where someone tortures the comic book guy by opening him in inbox toy. That's really what it is, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but then he does get the cool lines as well, you know, to join the collection is to be saved. What is your objection to salvation? As like, it seems like Brainiac's true form rules out, which is weird, but it's like, you know, it's got purple and it's slightly more humanoid in form now, so you can see he takes many forms, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No, no, here it is again. The multitude is on its way, Brainiac says, and he refers to the death list of the multitude. So it really feels like, yeah, whatever it was that took Krypton has a list of worlds, it's going down, and Earth is coming next on this, whatever the multitude is. You know, failure to join the collection means annihilation. You carry the Krypton moral imprint. You will not harm me. Oh, it's such a... you guys know. Is this awesome cinematic action hero moment again, you know? Superman has between his forefingers his miniaturized rocket with the computer intelligence in it, you know? I don't know if you can see what I have in my hand. I expect you can. The rocket that brought me to Earth. It has some kind of crystal computer system. And like everything else where I come from, it's invulnerable, so you won't have any defense against it. The real irony, you brought it here because you had to have it all. No, you stupid!
No!
I'll ask you what you ask me. Are you faster than a speeding bullet? He flicks the rocket at him, and it embeds itself in Brainiac's head. The Brainiac computer system in the rocket overrides the Brainiac element in the collector. He explodes Brainiac outward in a massive crystal explosion. That's the end of your film. That is such an action hero moment. Faster than a speeding bullet. Wicked sweet. Try to collect.
I love this little scene too at the end, like where like he just like passes out with exhaustion, and there's the sunlight. Yep, he's better.
Mike, try and reinstate Metropolis, and this all feeds back into what we saw in the little look into the future as well, where the Collector's satellite base has been overtaken by the Brainiac AI from Superman's ship and is now being used as his first Fortress of Solitude.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm still not 100% sure if we were supposed to see those two issues first or not. I'm not sure, given the fact that this runs to 6 issues altogether, and then I don't know how it's being collected exactly. You know, I feel like we probably were supposed to see those two issues first. In that little interlude.
I think we were. I think so.
I mean, the fact that they were drawn by a different...
It feels right. It feels right.
Yeah,
you know. And
it doesn't feel like a last decision to throw that in because
something's
running late or something. It feels like, hey, this is when it was supposed to have happened.
Also, because I was looking at the order for May, the solicitations for May, and the solicitation for Action Comics there is that Nimrod the Hunter is on Superman's trail, you know, and Nimrod the Hunter. Well, we don't know for sure if he was one of the characters from that issue, I don't think. I always assumed he was the guy with the fedora and the trench coat and the big shotgun on his back. But he was definitely... He was the guy who shot the pellet into Superman's brain that all the villains were living inside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, all coming back around. It's all coming back around. You know, Clark takes his story to the Daily... The Daily Star. Yes, sorry, the Daily Star. They say, you know, your job is done. You've done well. You can go and work for the Daily Planet now. So Clark goes up, and then a great little conclusion to the whole thing was that he speaks to the voice on the phone, who we saw him speak to once or twice before in the early half, and it turns out it was Lex Luthor all along. I'm like, I'm gonna have to go back and reread those comics now, because you remember, like, we were quite confused off the back of the first issue. Was like, how does this voice know that that was happening then? And there's, of course, there's Lex Luthor. He set the whole thing up. That's how the voice knew what was happening. I'm gonna have to go back and watch it all. We see that Metallo has been recovered. You know, he's alive without a heart. They'll stick a chunk of kryptonite in there. We'll get Metallo. We know that Superman's landlady knows who he is now, but she promises she'll keep his secret. You know, he just introduces himself to the world, and he goes to visit his parents' graves and says, it's all going well, and...
Whoa! Parents' graves? Mm-hmm. What? Parents are dead?
Well, yeah,
his
we knew
parents
that.
Did we know dead. That? You didn't know that?
Yeah, I don't remember that.
Yeah.
I didn't remember that.
I don't
that
think
when
they
I got
were.
To
they
this
went
point.
Go out of their way to show their deaths, but we got the backup strip a couple of issues ago that confirmed he was on his own now.
Oh.
Yeah.
He left Smallville.
I remember we got the backup strip that showed, like, the kind of little intercut things with his family.
Yeah, I didn't read that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's your fault.
I know. So that's what I'm saying. That's my fault for not reading the backups. So.
And I think they mentioned it in the first issue, too, didn't they? Like,
yeah,
you
know, I think he looked at a photo of them both, like, they were
Yeah,
dead.
I think there was a mention of it in the first issue.
Huh.
I just knew it for some reason.
DC
I knew
hates
somehow.
People. You know? No more marriages, no more parents. Just like, man.
Well.
Yeah.
And then he goes up to the satellite and looks down upon the Earth, and all is good.
Yes.
I mean, there's something vaguely sinister about that last page, but I don't really think there's supposed to be. I think it's just the fact that we don't know what he's saying. He's speaking in Kryptonian.
Yeah.
But I do like this Kryptonian language here, though, you know. Hala! Kal-El Don Edit Vix Lolo-E. It's something, it's particularly whenever the computer talks with it, it does sound like this incredible exultation.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly the issue where he finds the thing, you know, and it goes through this spiel of la-la-la-la, la-la-la-la, and then it ends, Hala! Kal-El! And you're like, oh. it sounds like this really great dramatic exaltation whenever you can penetrate that one little bit of its meaning. And then we get I'm not sure if we're seeing, I mean, I assume this must be, there's a two-page. It's an epilogue, it's called a prologue. I mean, I assume that it's not the first two pages of the next issue or anything. But it's the little man, and he is recruiting, Mr. Zarov. But Zarov is quoting the Bible and mentioning Nimrod, and he is the ultimate hunter, Dinosaur Island, and he hunts a T-Rex with a shotgun, as you do.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. I killed everything that ever lived. There are no challenges left. As of now, there's nothing I cannot or have not killed. What about a bulletproof man? Could you kill a bulletproof man? There's no such thing as bulletproof.
Yeah. To
be continued, motherfucker!
Headshot,
yeah.
Yeah, Action Comics is great.
Yeah.
Did you see the write-up on the next issue? It says some craziness going on in it.
Meet the Superman of Parallel Earth 23 in The Curse of Superman. And then if you go to the little Superman news page, it does seem to be Obama.
It's Obama as Superman.
Wow.
Because he's the president. They've already said, like, in the write-up that Superman is the president. Find out how Superman's the president and blah, blah, blah. And
President Superman takes on the menace of Super Doom. Not that this is the first time Morrison's done Obama as Superman, because he did it in Final Crisis as well. We saw a parallel universe where all the superheroes were black. Well, we saw Wonder Woman and Superman were black, but it was President Superman again there. So it seems like
could this be like that again? Could this be that same universe?
I think, if those universes still exist, post-Flashpoint, like maybe. I don't have Final Crisis within arm's reach to check the issue number. Sorry, the
vaguely remember that. Like, I don't remember it real well, but I vaguely remember that. Like, most of Final Crisis I've blocked out at this point.
Yeah. Well, I think the number, the planet number is probably the same, everything notwithstanding. So, yeah, that's the first arc of Morrison's Superman, and holy shit, have I enjoyed this. This is actually my favorite of the New 52 so far. I have so dug this. I've never read anything by Grant Morrison that's been so cinematic before. So not up its own arse.
I like Superman. Why is this happening to me?
Isn't that crazy?
Why?
Speeding bullet. that moment alone was worth the price of admission, you know. And it's great and now that I'm a bit more familiar with the way Morrison works after reading Batman. I mean, the reason I got on this book was because it had not been too long after the cosmic gears had aligned and I had understood what he was doing with his Batman, as I've said many times before. And I thought, if he is doing something on that level again, I want in on the ground floor this time. And he did, yeah. And I know now, reading his work, to really be paying attention to all the little things. And I bet there's stuff in here I'm not seeing.
Oh, yeah.
But I still feel like I am at least getting it on one more level than the surface, following all the stuff with the little man and following all the references. I mean, it's changed quite surprisingly in the span of 6 issues, you know, leaving aside the 2-issue digression, just as a 6-issue story, this, from being socialist Superman pounding the pavement and righting corporate wrongs, to space-age Superman fighting Brainiac.
Yeah,
you know,
he's,
but
like, he is Superman now. I mean, like, he's. I didn't think it was going to happen in this story. I thought they were going to go a little bit longer with what you were saying, like, you know, the Superman pounding his, you know.
Well, I think we said off the back of the first issue, if Morrison stays on this long enough, you can expect to see like the steady evolution of Superman as through the ages, as Superman was, from Golden Age socialist Superman through to the wacky monsters of the Silver Age and beyond, to the other defining things of the other eras. And that's really what's happened. If you put the stories in chronological order, if you take the 2-parter and put it after this where it falls, that's really what's happening on a massively more accelerated thematic scale than I thought it was going to happen. I mean, I haven't read a lot of classic or Silver Age Superman or DC in general. I just can't. I can't do it. I can't tolerate a lot of it. But when they started publishing the showcases, what they did, which was really like the showcases started with the Silver Age. They didn't go all the way back to the Golden Age. They did the sort of Silver Age starter markers and went forward from there. The first Superman showcase was the Brainiac story and a load of other stuff as well, obviously, because that was just one comic. So I kind of feel like Brainiac is the marker for that change between Golden Age Superman and Silver Age Superman. And that's what we've come up through here. We've come up through Golden Age, Man of the People Superman, through the alien barrier that Brainiac represents, in through to the Silver Age, where he is the icon of the people, not just a man who tries to put himself on their level and fight for the little person's rights on a personal level, but like who tries to protect the world as an icon to be looked up to, which is really what he's transforming into in the final pages here, when he appears in his costume before the people and says to his parents, yeah, you know, I got this. It's going to take a little time, but we've got there. You know, I feel like we have gone through that transformation in the span of one story arc, which was so much faster than I expected it to do. But
especially with Grant Morrison, my god, that was fast. You know?
But I mean, that makes me feel he's definitely got something comparative. Well, the same with Batman, really, but with his Batman, he's got something comparatively finite in mind that we are gonna get. I mean, I know he said he's gonna do at least 16 issues, and I would assume he'll probably wind up doing more. You know, but we've had 8 now, and we've had. The starting with the Golden Age, this story has transitioned us through to the Silver Age, and that 2-issue story is basically the entirety of the Silver Age, just encapsulated down to 2 absolutely insane issues.
So
I want to know where it's going to go next. You know, I think that's what it's supposed to be. I believe I'm interpreting it correctly whenever I interpret it in that manner. And more
sounds
peace.
Good.
Yeah.
Yes. my question is so like, okay, you said like he said he's going to do like 16 issues and hopefully more. What happens when he leaves? Do they keep doing action? I mean, they got to keep doing action though. They can't drop. Well, they can't like, you know, can't book, right?
Maybe after Mars, maybe they just do like Justice League and just bring it up to the present day and just make it another book. Because, I mean, obviously, this is finite by design. Of course, Smallville was fucking finite by design, and we know how long that ran on. But this is finite in that this is the 3 days.
For 11 years of Grant Morrison on action. I'm just saying that up front, okay?
I would agree with you on that one. I don't know if he just has like a finite 16-issue arc plan, which will sort of take us up through the major eras of Superman, up through the Silver Age, then we'll do the sort of neo-classic of the Bronze Age, the Man of Steel, the more humanized Superman, then I don't know if it'd be the Death or something in the 90s, and that's, you know, that's your 4 eras of Superman, Golden, Silver, Bronze, and Modern, or your eras of comics, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to finding out.
Yeah.
That way.
Yeah.
Yeah, the graphic novel now for this, the hardback collection of this, has been solicited for, I believe it's August. So it's a little way away yet. I believe it is planning to contain the first 8 issues. So get it, for Christ's sake.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, let's rapidly move then, since we are running close, to Avengers vs. X-Men.
Woo! Round one! Ding, ding!
I think I'll blast through this myself, if that's okay. Don't. All right. There's not much meat to this. I mean, this is really straightforward. For being an event, it's, like, pretty straightforward. You know, we're used to, like, you know, you think back to even to, like, Fear itself, and there's all this setup with, like, who's the Serpent and what's this? This is just, like, no. You got Hope, you got the Phoenix, you got X-Men, you got Avengers, punches in the face. Yeah. There you go.
And, you know, that's a lot better, honestly. It is. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's a serpent. You don't know what he is, and we're going to give you, like, 500 different mini-books that'll tell you what this is that you're not going to read anyway. No, just it needs to be the Phoenix, X-Men, the Avengers, and this is what they're standing for.
So the comic starts out a nice, serene, farming place. Not Earth, but, you know, somewhere. And a small boy with weird things coming out of his head turns.
It makes
and
you think Earth for a second, though.
Yeah, it does for just a second until the spiky weird-faced kid turns and in alien language. It's like, father? And they turn around, and you're like, oh, it's the sunrise. No, it's the Phoenix. Caw! Woof! Burning your planet down.
I think it's
in your galaxy, burning your planet.
Yeah.
I think it should add the caw whenever it does kill a galaxy.
Woof! And the Phoenix flies on, burns a planet down, flies on, burns a planet down, flies on. Meanwhile, back on Earth, the Avengers are noted to something falling from the sky. They all assemble, and lo and behold, and there's, like, of course, like a whole action sequence, like, a la...
Take an awfully long time to do very little.
Yeah, I mean, like, the thing crashes through the Chrysler building, and a plane starts to crash.
I don't think that's the Avengers' fault, though.
No.
I think that's
Bendis' fault. He scripted it, you know.
Yeah, there's basically a full page of drawing shit and saving stuff. You know, Spider-Man webbing net, save stuff, yada, yada, yada. God, that's a lot of... you're right. That's a lot of just not happening for, like, 4 pages.
Hey, it turns out the thing was Nova.
It's Nova!
Now, this is the epic fail Nova, whose adventures you can currently enjoy in Ultimate Spider-Man the Cartoon.
Yep. So there you go.
Now, there's also that digital exclusive comic. Did either of you
Let's
read it?
Not speak of it. Oh, sorry, no, I thought you were talking about something else.
Right.
I did not read it yet, no.
I want to read it. Brian says it's good. Mark Waid did.
Well, it is.
So
Waid here's the thing, right? I'm going to try not to, like, fill your ears with rage. I'm just going to drop this fact and then go quiet.
Okay.
All right, Jeff Loeb created this Nova, okay?
Oh.
Yep, and his name's Sam.
Okay. Oh, just like the TV show, so it is the same guy, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. And his name's Sam.
Wow.
Okay.
So,
you get what I'm saying here.
I get what you're saying, and you got it. We'll just, like, go back to, like, a couple, about 100 episodes. No, it's not even 100, is it? It's been 50 episodes or something, and listen to
a while ago.
It's worth listening to.
Anyway, the most important thing that Nova tells us is it's coming, which we already fucking knew. So I'm not sure why he had to destroy the Chrysler building to tell us that, but cool.
He was in a hurry.
Meanwhile, back on Utopia, Scott's a total dick.
Yes, he is.
Which we kind of knew, because he's still trying to train Hope, and he's beating the shit out of her, and teaching her to fight, telling her not to fight with her powers, and yada yada.
It's funny, this, because this is not anything Hope has not gone through already with Cable. It's kind of a weird scene.
Yeah, it is kind of odd.
I mean, I don't know Hope very well, but I know Cable trained the shit out of her with no powers.
And Cable's way more badass than...
In the Uncanny X-Men comics, Cyclops gives her shit.
Yeah.
Like a lot. So this isn't new. This isn't something that just fell out of.
This is almost more establishing, like, if you don't know anything about the relationship between Hope and Scott and whatever.
Yeah.
So this seems
this is Scott's issues. I mean, let's be honest here. Like, we haven't got to the end of it, but in general, this issue is an issue for people who don't know what's going on.
Yeah, it's almost like this should have been zero, maybe.
Yeah,
and then we could have got into the meat.
I liked it better than zero.
Yeah, I liked it.
No, I think I enjoyed zero better than this one. To be honest,
I like the second story, but the first story I'm going to tell you because I wasn't here last week, and I'm sure you guys talked about it. The Scarlet Witch story reminded me why I hate Bendis.
Oh, what the hell? No, Vision's totally excited to be a dick.
No, listen to, like, when Bendis did Avengers Disassembled, and Scarlet Witch went crazy. Killed Vision, killed Hawkeye. Like, all this happened in, like two issues, I think, or something. Mm-hmm. He just, like, threw it all out there. I know he's got, like, to address it. Like, you know, she goes back to the mansion and everything. But, dude, like, everything about that issue just, like, reminded me why I hate Bendis.
Yeah, well,
like,
Avengers. It just reminded you of the bad times.
It just reminded me of the bad times.
Well, I can't argue with that.
Yeah. So anyway, she's trying to figure out why Scott's riding her so hard and he's not answering, and so she burst out with Phoenix energy at him.
Boom. I don't get it. Whatever.
Yeah, I don't get it either, but whatever.
It's not like there's not precedent for it, but
no.
Jean was, I mean, back during Morrison's run, Jean was doing this before she became the Phoenix again.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to go back to fucking Morrison's run again. This operates, Wolverine gives a little speech in a couple of pages time, which is just like, no, that's wrong. That didn't happen. But,
what did he say?
We'll get there. So meanwhile, back at the White House, the Avengers explain who the Phoenix is and why it's important we catch her and that the thing is coming and so we probably should kill Hope.
The quick, solid fill-in for the... They didn't say that.
Yeah. No? Oh, I mean, not kill Hope. You know, kill the Phoenix. I'm sorry, kill the Phoenix. Yeah. Not Hope. But yeah. But then by the end of this...
Oh, but they're thinking that.
Yeah. So for some reason they go talk to Wolverine. Why were they talking to him?
They want his help.
Because he's an X-Men. He knows what's going on with this shit.
Yeah.
Captain America wasn't there when it was there.
The Phoenix, and Cap says, you were there when the Phoenix first came to Earth. And Wolverine says, Jean Grey did everything she could to try and contain it, but eventually she had to kill herself to stop it. No, she didn't. That's not what happened. Jean Grey never died. That was the Phoenix impersonating Jean Grey.
No. That never happened, Chris.
See, what matters is what Bendis writes.
If Chris Claremont has anything to say about it, that didn't happen. It happened. She killed herself.
Yeah, you know? But she did. So, he even wrote the story where she came back.
And the obligatory, can we count on you? And silence. Okay.
I thought that was like Walter Simonson or somebody that did X Factor. Was that X Factor?
Well, no,
it was
a crossover between, of all things, if I remember correctly, Fantastic Four, Avengers, and X Factor. So yeah, actually, Claremont didn't write it, but he had to run with it.
Yeah.
Okay. So again, we have a conversation with Scott establishing things that we already knew, which that he basically thinks that Hope is going to be the salvation for the mutant race, and so we just basically again establish things that we already know. But it's okay, people, we're getting close. And lo, there came a Captain America.
Boom.
Dun dun. So the X-Men set aside, the four X-Men that are gonna fight the 500 Avengers are standing to the side, listening to the conversation as Cap's like, we need Hope. And Cyclops says, go fuck yourself. And Cap's like, no, really.
Yeah.
We need Hope. And Scott's like, no, really.
We're telling.
And Scott's like,
we're not asking, we're telling.
No, really. Go fuck yourself. Honestly, actually, I'm paraphrasing the dialogue, but basically,
Cyclops is Captain America is not in the wrong here. Captain America has come here quite respectfully, talked in a measured tone. Explain the urgency of the situation and that this is a world, this is a world problem, not a mutant problem. Cyclops is turning it into something that basically affects 200 people. Cyclops is like, step off, bro, And Cyclops is like, come at me, bro. And that's what happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
He gives him an eyeful. That's what we get.
Yeah. Yeah.
An eyeful. Cyclops is the aggressor here.
Yeah. He yeah. Cyclops totally attacks. And then we get the Avengers assemble. And there's again 500 Avengers versus five X-Men.
And a Hulk.
And a Hulk.
I wish this issue would have just ended that when the Helicarrier shows up and then you see all the Avengers, I wish that like Cyclops would have been like, shit. You know? Yeah. I just want that.
Are you kidding? He's like, are you kidding? I've got the craziest motherfucker around. I got Magneto. You think I'm nutty? This motherfucker's crazy. He'd crush all y'all.
I have a feeling that the next issue is going to start with the X-Men running away. I'm just saying. I have a feeling that's how it's going to start.
I don't know. I like, though, I mean, again, we've talked about this event. I mean, one of the things is that there's not really any one-shots. I mean, these are all tying in to pre-existing issues. You know, so there's plenty of...
I think between us, we probably all get them. So, you know.
I don't know.
Most of the tie-ins, I think.
I've dropped everything but Academy, so...
You know, I get Avengers New Avengers and Academy and Triplets Got Uncanny and Wolverine and the X-Men covered.
Yeah,
so I think we'll probably...
I think the only thing is, like, what, New Mutants and Secret Avengers?
Yeah, those may be the only two. I may pick them up just for the event, so...
Maybe Captain America has some tie-ins, but I don't think it even does. I don't think even Cap or Thor have tie-ins.
Yeah. So, anyway, 2 weeks, come back. So this has got a digital copy, and what are the little AR things? Is that a link to something?
Oh, do not get me started on the AR things. We'll come back to those in a moment. Let's talk a little bit more about the actual comic. So there's a, you know, this is a fairly substantial comic. I counted the pages, but I've forgotten. Hang on, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18. Man, there are like no ads in this thing. 20, 36, 28, 30, 32, 34. It's a 34-page comic with no ads interrupting the story. So, you know, you're getting your money's worth at $4. I don't think every issue is going to be this size, unfortunately. But,
you're getting
you know,
a lot of good John Romita Jr. art.
Oh, yeah.
You're getting an
it looks good.
Awful lot of silent double-page spreads. Given that the single talkiest part of the book was the 5-page preview included in every Marvel comic for the last month.
Yeah.
There is not a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of time spent reading this. One thing that I was kind of irked by it, but one thing that I've seen a couple of people point out, which they're actually right about, and I've kind of come around to realizing about it now, is that as much as I said, like, this issue is the issue for people who haven't been paying attention and are just like, here's the deal, this is what's happening, here we go, and then they're fighting by the end. They are actually fighting by the end.
Yeah.
They're not monkeying around with this.
Oh, no, no.
Marvel have just been trailing the high concept. So we still have room to be surprised by the actual story. And that's a good thing. That is a good thing.
Yeah.
I'm glad that they get going. I'm glad that it doesn't, it's like, oh yeah, it's Avengers versus X-Men, and you won't, there's 12 issues to this thing, and they don't actually start fighting until issue 6. No.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like Fear itself. You know? They danced around what the whole point of the thing even was. And the hammers, everybody hadn't even got their hammers till what, issue 3-ish, maybe even issue 4-ish. And it was just that was just such a piecemeal thing. Whereas this, you know, comparatively, I want to call it uneventful, but I guess it's not really uneventful because it really is just putting all the ducks in a row. It kind of hurts it whenever you've been following all this stuff and you know all this stuff already, and like nothing happens in this that you don't expect, but that it actually gets up to the point where the characters have their big brouhaha and they have it out, and like we're ready to rock now at the end of this first issue. It took me until after I read it to sort of realize that and come around.
It sort of makes sense the way they did it though, because like I was talking to Brian, he doesn't read any Avengers or X-Men comics or anything, so he knows nothing about Hope, but everything.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's all
this.
About Hope, isn't it? It is. There's no, you know, anybody reading the Avengers books isn't going to have.
So
any
he read
problems.
It. He was like asking me about Hope, like, "Hey, who's Hope? What's going on with this? You know, she's like this savior of the mutants and everything." I explained it to him because you know I've been reading the books, and like he basically got it because you know everything he needs is in this book, and that's good because he didn't have to read another book; he just had to read this book. I like that. Yeah. I like that it didn't say, like, here's a little star. To find out more about Hope, go see Messiah War or that other was. You know what I mean? I don't want that. I mean, you don't need that. Just set it up and then get it going, and then boom, they're going to fight. That's all
the
you
thing
need.
The thing with Nova at the start still annoys me, though, because it is... What, actually, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7... 8 pages it takes them to deal with his calamitous crash landing. And I'm like, what is that? What does this have to do with anything? You know, he's going to tell you. Is he going to appear again in the course of these 12 issues? He's neither an Avenger nor an X-Men. He told you it's coming. That's literally all that he has to do in the purposes of the story, you know. And it's like, you dedicated literally one full quarter of this book's runtime to that.
And the thing that's odd is that, again, it's all of this of, like, him crashing through, destroying all this stuff, breaking up, and then he's like, it's coming. And literally, they could have gone, oh, yeah, we know.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, thanks for wrecking everything to tell us something we already knew.
We just built that. We just repaired that. I mean, they're actually here at the new Stark Tower, aren't they? It's like, hang on. Not your condescending Ms. Marvel. No, this isn't an inauguration for the new tower or anything, because I can't keep up how many times that bastard tower has been destroyed in the last 6 months. But, it's not uneventful. It's just that it doesn't tell anybody who's up on the hype and up on continuity what's happening. And I suppose I can't really criticize it for that, because it is the first issue of, like, the highest selling book of the year so far. There are going to be people picking this up who don't know what's going on. So I guess I grudgingly accept that, yes, you do have to write this as if it is. I just wish it could have been a little bit more eventful and been a little bit lighter on the silent double page spreads. And also, fuck these little AR icons.
What is it? I mean, obviously, it's
in their ear. You point your smartphone at the AR icon, and it brings up little things, little augmented reality content. I believe there's like a little motion comic that shows you Nova's arrival from his point of view. I'm not actually sure if that's the way in an Inman story or not, or some other pages where it like peels back the art and shows you like the inks and the pencils and the sketches underneath it. And you know what? I'm all for bonus content. I don't really give a fuck. But I did not know till I opened this comic that meant these little AR icons were going to be jammed in the corners of the panels in comic. Yeah. And fuck that. That is gimmickry. I don't give a shit about gimmickry, but that is gimmickry to the detriment of the storytelling. And it can fuck right off. It is the worst thing in the history of creation. It's just the worst thing man has ever done.
I'll be honest.
I want it to die and go away.
I'll be honest. I didn't even notice it until my
second reading. I couldn't not notice it with every turn of the page. I turned the page to the title page, Avengers versus X-Men, Kaboom, Phoenix. What the fuck is that?
I'll tell you how stupid I am. When I was looking at it, and I didn't even think that it could be like something like that. At first, I was like thinking, so like what news channel are they watching that they're seeing the Phoenix destroy a universe?
That's awesome.
I mean, I didn't even mind it so much on the double-page title spread, because it's in with all the other credits and everything. But then I turned the page, and there it was again. It's like the print equivalent of a hyperlink.
Yeah.
It is pretty stupid.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
No, I do not approve, and I wish to see it die. I don't want to see it anymore in my comics.
Yeah, good luck with that.
I think you're going to see it in a lot of
yeah.
Lot
good
of
luck with that.
Forward.
So. Cool. I mean, I have to say, overall, though, I think I like it.
That really actually got in the way of my enjoying the comic. I want to like mark it down 2 stars because of the presence of those filled me with hatred and bile. But you know, I'm already quite full of those things on a regular basis. So.
No, it's good though. I mean, I don't mind it. I mean, I think it's a good. It's a nice start. Like I said, this could have been 0 issue, but. Yeah, I mean, the fact, like you said, that by the end of it, they're already into, like, the fight, I'm like, all right, cool, here we go. Sweet.
But, you know, we don't actually know. We know what the high concept is. But there's, you know, there's surprises and story to come yet, you know. It's already living up to the promise of the concept, where Fear itself just floundered and was never even really able to tell us what it was about as part of the marketing.
I still don't even know what it was about.
I know. This is right.
I read all of it.
You get the start of Fear itself. It's like, oh, it's Fear and sociology and then and social trends and also Hammers. And then you get the ads that come a month or two later. It's like, who are the Worthy? You know, here's the Worthy and a load of clip shows basically for the middle issues of the thing.
Who are the Mighty?
Like, who are Mighty, yeah. And it's like, here's a big silhouette. And then it's like, pick one fucking thing for your story to be about, you know? Yeah. And it's like, this has delivered. This has sold itself on the high concept with more to come off the back of it. And I do give it credit for that. I do. I'd have to say I'm more looking forward to subsequent issues that'll be written by Hickman and Aaron rather than the early by Ben.
I'm really interested to see what's going to happen in Wolverine and the X-Men, because he's there with the Avengers. And how is that going to affect Wolverine in the X-Men book?
Yeah.
I mean, it's no surprise that Beast and Wolverine are on the Avengers side, being A, that they're Avengers, and B, that they did actively have fallings out with Cyclops.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah, I just mean, like, you know, the whole thing that Cyclops is going to turn it into, like, a mutant issue. It's like, you know, this is, you know, you're stepping on my grounds, Cap. You know, he basically made a point of that, and then he gave him an eyeful, like I like to keep saying.
Boom. Cool. All right.
I think it's going to be more interesting than with Fear itself. I wasn't interested at all with the issues for Fear itself, but this, I don't know.
It's good. It's cool. It's a good start. I'm excited for our first.
I was not in love with it off the bat. I preferred the Zero issue, and I think even now I still probably prefer the Zero issue. But I've definitely softened on it after thinking about it and, you know, seeing some other people raise some points that I hadn't considered on my initial read through, and the whole AR thing distracting me. So, you know, it's not a bad start. It's not a bad start. Not bad.
It's good. Cool. All right. Well, we have run long, so I think we are going to go ahead and get out of here then. No lingering in the end of the show. Check out the website, fanboyversus.com. Join us on Twitter at fanboyvs. Remember that in 3 weeks we will be gone. BotCon, so no show that week, but we all should be back next week, so very exciting. So cool. Awesome. Well, thank you guys. Enjoy our Easter issue, which had nothing to do with Easter. So so thank you all for joining us, and please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy Versus.
This has been Fanboy Versus. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.